Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sometimes the world looks like you ain't ever seen it before. Stuck behind never-ending windows, all you need is a door. Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remember, in unusual times, it can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Just ask, say the word and I'll be there. Just ask, you know the greatest things in life all come in a pair. They say hindsight's 20/20, but that ain't far enough. Pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit 90 Shows taught me.
Shit 90 Shows taught me was not filmed before a live studio audience.
Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. I'm Jess Sterling, here with my co-host, or should I say my Thelma, or maybe my Louise? Sarah Ferguson. Sarah, how are you?
Oh, it's the greatest debate. How I am. Yeah, like, I mean, I don't even know. That's pretty much a debate. But B, who's the Thelma? Who's the Louise? We're going to have to spend a lot of time digging in deep. But can't complain today. Can you complain?
I always can complain, of course. But yeah. Too much to complain about today. We're recording on Friday. Friday evenings are like my bread and butter. We're heading into the weekend for us in the States. It is a long weekend. Thank you, Martin Luther King Jr., for giving us a freebie Monday off. We appreciate it so much. I'm in pretty high spirits. But Sarah, if we're going to have this debate, we have to bring in a tiebreaker. We can't debate this just alone. So we need to bring in someone who has joined us once before to talk about one of the stars of this film. Much smaller role in this film than in the other film, but we got to bring in apparently our Brad Pitt expert, Sarah Carradine.
Just call me Harvey Keitel. There we go. Harvey Keitel was definitely Thelma and Louise's biggest hype person. So, Sarah Carradine, you're going to have to be our big hype person today.
Of course. I love you both desperately. Don't, please don't go anywhere.
You're going to be like trying to get us to just come home. It's like,
just going to drive off of into the Grand Canyon. Just
are you going to run after us?
Yes. Running after a T-bird as it flies into the Grand Canyon.
Where was Amazing. He going?
This he is just, my first... He just his desperate passion, passion, his belief in them. He knew what happened in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're really going to have to give me an education on a lot of the details of this movie because it was my first time watching.
Mine too. I've never seen this movie. Although I will say, so this has been on our list, Sarah, and like we sent it to the other Sarah. We sent the other Sarah our list of like, hey, find a movie that if you want one of these movies, if you're interested in any of these, let us know. And Sarah, you said, yes, Thelma and Louise. And we were like, that feels perfect because neither one of us has seen it. I will say this feels, Sarah, you love Romy and Michelle. It is like your favorite movie.
It is.
This feels like a parallel universe, Romy and Michelle, where they're just on the run.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. two women in cars. Yeah, I can follow
that. We love
that.
Women in cars.
Yeah. We've been circling around Thelma and Louise for a while. We definitely wanted to do it. So when the opportunity arose that we were going to be talking about this with you, Sarah, I was just like, yeah, let's do it. I'm really excited.
I'm fascinated to know whether it holds up for you too. I watched it again, of course. I mean, you can always watch Thelma and Louise. And I was thinking very much, does it hold up? And I thought, oh my God, this hasn't aged at all. But then I know it well, and I am the same age. I'm slightly younger than my co-star on a film that I was in, Gina Davis. And I'm sort of 10 years younger than Susan Sarandon, the great Susan Sarandon. To me, this feels very fresh. But I'm very fascinated to know whether for you two it has aged or it feels dated at all to you.
Yeah, like I would say for me personally, so this is a 1991 film for those who maybe didn't watch it. I would say like it feels very 90s, like everything about it, like from the hair to the outfits to just the general vibe. It all feels very 90s, speaking as someone who like covers a lot of 90s stuff. Yes. I thought I was entertained the entire way through. And let me tell you, Sarah knows this. I am a big proponent of we don't need to make our movies so long. Why you do this to me? You know, like, why is it so long? I was entertained from start to finish, all 2 hours and what, like 10 minutes of it. It was so good. I immediately was drawn in. I mean, I think mostly we got it hands down, Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis, just so entertaining, so magnetic. Like I am immediately sucked in to those two characters and I empathize with them immediately, right? Like Sarah, I feel like this is a story as old as time where you have like two women unhappy with their lives, right? Gina Davis is married to this like awful husband who truly is just like, I'm staying in the kitchen type of guy.
How does it go?
Stay in the kitchen.
What a magnificent performance. Not yours so much, but from this actor. Oh. I mean, pitch
perfect. Drag her.
Yeah, Daryl. Stupid Daryl.
Daryl.
Yes. But Sarah, for me, this really held up. How about you on your first watch? Did this hold up for you in terms of the storyline?
I actually think that this film is probably ahead of its time because as we've talked about in a lot of our movies, to have a female-centered cast where they're doing something, you know, I'm thinking back to League of Their Own where it was a female-centered movie and with also with Gina Davis. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if they like really appreciated the fact that it was like a female sports movie, but now we appreciate that. And I think that that's kind of this film as well, because, you know, in a lot of sense, it's a friend movie. It's a friend about loving another person, but a platonic love.
But I love that. Like the, because that's why I feel like it really is similar to Romy and Michelle, because we've talked about this a lot of like the idea of the female friendship and like the platonic soulmate. And that feels present in this movie as well. You can just feel that Thelma and Louise were meant to be this like ride or die twosome to the end of time. Yeah. And I so appreciate about that. They're like, screw these boys. We don't need them. We're going to go out on a cool T-Bird and just run, drive around and basically essentially break bad. And I'm all about it. I'm all about it.
Yeah. I saw this interview with Susan Sarandon on the Drew Barrymore show. And she said something really interesting. And maybe Sarah can talk about this since you might have seen this for like when it first came out, where a lot of men in particular were like offended by this movie because it was like women who were acting bad and going off on their own and kind of being criminals and like having sex and whatever. And a lot of like people were like, you know, women need to be like demure. And these women were like free. And I think that in like offended some people back in the day.
Yes, I mean offended. Is that the word?
Susan's wordage.
Well, if Susan said it,
Susan said it.
For me, I mean, I remember at the time it was, if you can believe it, controversial. like, it's really hard to look at it now. I mean, when I said it wasn't dated, obviously the clothes and the phone boxes, mm-hmm. Kids Ask Your Grandparents and all of those things have a very, very 90s feel. But in terms of the centeredness of the women, of this platonic friendship, of them moving through so many, I mean, the beats in this film are incredible. The moment where Thelma takes control. Louise has always been in control.
Yes.
The control passes to Thelma. And then Thelma talks about, I'm awake. Are you awake? I'm awake. I've never been awake before. And then when she says, I've broken through and I can't go back. I mean, these extraordinary statements. So I think that the offense there was that these women existed.
Mm-hmm.
Women being women, being centered in an action film, being centered in a broad vista film. I mean, some of the beauty and the ugliness of America as vistas were shown. This broad horizon, we don't see women, particularly two women with no men, Harvey Keitel aside, who's always inside, he's inside things mm-hmm. until the end. They're out in the broad, you know, horizon-filled landscape. And I think this is the offence, that they existed at all and that there was a movie that didn't talk to men. I mean, mm-hmm. Ridley Scott had the script from Kelly Curry and he was shopping it around to directors, fairly high-profile directors. Kelly Curry thought she maybe would self-produce it, it'd be this little indie film. Ridley mm-hmm. Scott got hold of it and went, oh, no. I mean, he knows a great movie when he reads it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was shopping it around to some high-profile male directors, all of whom turned it down. And one of them said, why would I do this? It's two bees in a car. And Ridley Scott said, you know what? It's actually not. It's not a small. They said it's a small film. He said it's not a small film.
Mm-mm.
So in a way, how Kelly Curry tells it is that in shopping it to these different directors and in pitching why they should do this film, Ridley Scott went, oh, no, I should just direct it.
Yeah.
And
I'm so happy he
right.
did.
Oh,
it's epic, right? Like, the thing that I love most about it is that it has kind of all the components. It has heart, but it also has like the grit and the action sequences. And like, there's a lot to love about this film. And I'm happy that it eventually, you know, it does get the critical praise that it does, because it, like you said, it very much deserves it. And it does feel like women were owed this movie. That I think, especially, I agree with what you said, Sarah, too, about it being like before its time. Because think about the 90s and how a lot of shows would show movies and show women in like a very different light of like being secondary to men. A lot of the time, they're never usually the main character of the story, right? Mm-hmm. Like just in history in general, and giving them the spotlight and showing like some of this stuff we're dealing with still today, right? Like the trucker on the road,
yes.
right? Like. The audacity of this man to say what he says to them. I really like the bit of like them seeing him everywhere they go, but then how terrible he is. And finally, they've just had enough. And let me tell you, like, I feel like this is like Woodstock? What's the moment? This is like the bra burning moment of the entire film. It's like, yes, blow up his stupid truck. Like, there are women everywhere.
You've got to think too that Ridley Scott directed Alien in 1979.
Oh.
And 1979, well outside the purview of the 90s, well, mm-hmm. you know, 10, 12 years before this film, which centered a female action
heroine. That's
Sigourney Weaver. So this is, I believe Ridley Scott knows how to make these big movies,
yeah.
Big in either scope, like space, you know, is very big, although the smallness of the ship kind of controls them. But big ideas that this woman could be the most frightening thing in Aliens 2, a lesser movie, but still worth seeing, when she's stranded on the planet with all the terrible men. It's a jail planet and they're all rapists and murderers. And one of them comes up to her and, you know, gives his credentials as a terrible rapist and murderer. And she looks at him and she says, I must frighten you very much in that case. You know, so Ridley Scott knows how to pick and I was going to say pickle, because it's not pickled, it's very living. He knows how to say these are big lives, like these small lives are big lives.
Well, that's the best part, we have these women from Arkansas, right? Like what show or movie takes place in Arkansas? Like there aren't any. It's New York, it's California.
Thought about Arkansas in my life.
That's what I'm saying. So you have these two women who are from like Nowheresville, Arkansas. One is a housewife, one is a waitress, which like on paper to the world means nothing, but it tells you that like even people in these small towns with like jobs that wouldn't be impressive to most people, there's something there. They have a spark. They have something, and all they want is to get out. They want to go out for just like a weekend, which it killed me. I have to say, like within the first 10 minutes, it killed me that Thelma is like, let me ask my husband. Like, oh, it's just like a dagger to the heart, right? To see that. And then she ends up leaving anyway. And it just seems like
she left a note.
She left the food in the microwave.
But I love it. And it just, I felt like from the moment that Thelma got in the car, she had this sense of like levity and like freedom. And her just being like, come on, Louise, please, can we just stop? I never get to go out. And it's just, I feel like we've all kind of been in a, I don't know, we've all been in a space where we're in the kind of the daily grind, the monotony, mm-hmm. And to want to live it up while you're away. And so I thought these characters were so electric. And even though I felt like just as Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis, this is a fast, like, this is so good. They were so good in this movie where like, I felt like I immediately knew who these characters were. Like I just immediately could connect with them and like, oh, I connected with this with Thelma and this with Louise and, you know.
In a way that perhaps Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn, who were attached to the project before it just took too long to find a director and so they went on to other things, in a way that perhaps they wouldn't have.
Yeah, I can't really see. I mean, Meryl Streep can really do anything.
Meryl Streep can do anything.
Right? Mm-hmm. So and we love Goldie Hawn, but Meryl Streep would, in my mind, probably play Louise to Goldie Hawn's Thelma. That casting probably makes mm-hmm. sense to me. But mm-hmm. it would feel like a very different movie. And I really, really appreciate how we ended up. I like the word like freedom for this movie liberation, because I feel like that's kind of like what we're holding on to. It's two women that like really have to do the daily grind either, and they're either like submissive to their husband or to making money and like doing a job. You know, Louise had to leave Texas. I don't know what her situation was before, if she was married or was a housewife at one point too, but like she left to go to Arkansas to get out of a bad situation and make something of herself on her own. That's freedom. Gina Davis, Thelma, got to be free for the first time in her life, and she was, I just like think to being stuck in a situation in a unhappy marriage, just to get out and be free and just let your hair down in a mm-hmm. sense, which she ultimately does. Really.
I love the vision of two, like, to your point of like letting your hair down.
Yeah.
How the movie, from start to finish, when you start the film, especially Thelma, I feel like is mm-hmm. so done up, right? Like she's in this like skirt and like her hair is perfect. And we have so many instances in this film where Louise is like, she sees those two women in the window, and then she looks at herself in like the rearview mirror and is like about to put lipstick on, and you could sense she's like, should I do myself up? But by the end of the film, they are like covered in road dust, like completely unkempt with these hats, hair, who cares? I just, like you said, there's this sense of freedom of like getting down and dirty and like being, not feeling the need to, right? Because when you look at, again, put on makeup if you want, like as long as you feel beautiful, that's what should matter. But the reason makeup became a thing and like fashion became a thing is to like impress others and to feel like you have to dress like this to be a housewife, to be a good housewife. You have to look like XYZ. And I kind of loved at the end that they just had this like unabashed, I can be whoever I want. I could look however I want. We're going to drive off of this cliff together.
The makeup and I mean the whole costume department was amazing on this, but the with the makeup department, they had plotted hour by hour the sunburn and suntan on their faces, and I just love that. So the noses so and the chins and the foreheads are
right because they're in a convertible.
Yep, they're in a convertible. So I just love that. And watching it this time, I recalled that I'd read about that at some point, and I just so enjoyed that. And it's not drawing attention to itself, but it's that realness. And as you say, when she goes to put her lipstick on and throws the lipstick out of the car, just tosses it. It's just fantastic. Yes, there's a lot.
She's
of
just like, who cares? Yeah. Like, who am I? And again, if you want to wear lipstick because you feel beautiful in lipstick, like I am all for that. It's not about that. It is the expectation. It is the like feeling like it's necessary. Feeling like I'm not me until I put my lipstick on. It's
right.
I loved that, and I felt like watching. I don't know that Sarah. To me, this movie felt like it had a seasons long. Television show of growth in 2 hours. Like these characters grew an immense amount in 2 hours. It's wild.
Well, I think this speaks to 90s movies in general, and something that I've been really starving for in media today is that I always felt that 90s movies created an entire world and had complete storytelling, unique writing. And I don't see it as much. I don't watch a lot of television, so maybe there is a lot of media that actually does it, but it's not something that I'm watching.
There's a lot of like reboots and stuff nowadays.
That too. Yeah. I just think something like, remember like the Truman Show, incredibly unique in its own world. Now and then it felt like that, what's that, like Firefly Lane or whatever it was called. It's not called Firefly Lane, but like the little town, like you can feel that town that they were in.
Yeah.
And this is its own world. And there is a lot of character developed in these few days between these two characters. And it really is like, I mean, Thelma is a 35-year-old ish wife, and she didn't she say like she got it was her her husband was her only partner in her life, and she got married pretty young, and the reason why she doesn't have kids currently is because her husband doesn't want it. And I'm sure that when she was younger thought that was her life purpose, but now her life purpose is being a housewife. And the how mundane that must feel for her to live day in and day out serving her husband and probably doing Tupperware parties and like doing like I don't know those
coupon
little makeup
clipping
parties.
There's
exactly
coupons everywhere.
The
just
mundane
for me
life.
This incredible it's so momentary, and you absolutely understand her when she's kind of, I was going to say bustling, floating about getting his breakfast. She wants to ask. She's got this inner resistance. She wants to ask him if she could go on the holiday. We know that. She can't ask him. And she has the chocolate bar, and she takes a tiny bite. She puts it in the fridge. She walks away from it. Yes. She comes back. She opens the fridge, another tiny bite, putting it back in the fridge. And this gives us her. She's trapped in this very small kitchen. She's meeting out her treats, like at the tiny bite by tiny bite.
It reminded me if she was like a 50s housewife, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like she wasn't a career woman. She like probably wasn't allowed by her husband to get a career. Her job was essentially to be pretty, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That
she says she's going to get a job in Mexico, and Louise snorts with disbelief that she's going to get a job.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's never worked.
Well, that's the thing. It's just these women feel so real to me. Like there are so many women out there that were and are just like these women, where it's you're brought up a specific way in a specific time, where your job is to get out of high school and get married and then pop out a few kids and stay home with them, right? Maybe Thelma doesn't have the kids in that situation, but her entire life, like Sarah says, revolves around serving someone else, being secondary Daryl. To someone else. And stupid Daryl.
To Daryl.
Daryl sucks.
But yeah. Yeah, we need more impressions, Jess. Are you gonna
I will say the moment that that really, really cracked me up when Christopher McDonald walks out to his car and he like slips on some of the like construction materials.
So good.
He's like, clean this up before I get back.
One of my favorite moments of the entire film involves him, and it's when Thelma calls him and he goes, "Oh, hey, Thelma," and she immediately hangs up and she's like, he knows.
Because he's never nice enough to her.
No, I know.
And no, that's get your ass back here right now. It's like, yeah, that's really going to bring her back. Yeah. I mean, talk about the lived experience when the gorgeous Michael Madsen arrives unexpectedly in Oklahoma City, and he and Louise have essentially their breakup. I mean, again, we see the violence that these women live with. This is Jimmy, who she loves enough. And when she displeases him, he throws a table across the motel room.
Yeah.
And then we can see, and when he wants her to come and sit down and she says, "No, I'm fine here," we can see what she's withstood, like mostly good. This man is mostly good.
And that's the thing.
That's what they accept.
That's what women have to, are forced to accept, is, well, he's mostly okay. He just has these tiny moments and maybe it'll improve. Maybe it'll get better. Like they're forced to settle. And it's so sad because these women are electric. Like, there's no other word for it. Like, they are electric, and it's so sad to see them like just basically boxed in. They're shoved into a box and told this is who you have to be, instead of being able to spread their wings and like actually this is why they can't go back, right? Like, at the very end, they can't go back. They can't turn around because they don't want to go back to the life that they had, or, I mean, obviously go to jail, but like they don't want to live like that again. They don't want to be caged anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jess. It like transcends that going back would mean going to jail. That's almost secondary. It's the idea of going back at all to anything that they've ever had before.
Yeah,
is just anathema to them. And they're now awake and they've gone through and they can't go back. Yeah. And because of the beautiful construction, the fantastic writing, the amazing performances, we've gone on that journey with them. There's not a moment where you go, "Oh, where did that come from? Where did this change come from?" Thelma taking charge when Louise is crying desperately. She just takes charge and you don't go, "Where did that come from?" You go, "Yes, that's her. It's another version of her. We get to this moment. We get to this moment. We get to this next moment." And, I mean, it's just incredible. Susan Sarandon at the time was 44, but the women are supposed to be the same age, and I completely buy them as both sort of mid-30s, which is a really interesting time You know, you've had that youth and that excitement and what will happen, and now you look around yourself and you go, what is it?
I'm 34, which is probably around the age, I'm about to be 34 in a few months, which is about the age that I think these women are supposed to be. And like, yes, that's why I'm harping on the word freedom. And I especially feel that way now, where I'm a 33-year-old without children, and I'm kind of coming to my life where I'm like, I do want to be free. Like, I want to be able to travel and do like trips and like not answer to anybody except for my dogs. Like, you know, that's kind of like what I'm like thirsty for. I'm thirsty for an adventure, because I mean, I didn't really live in my 20s either. Like, I was very like anxious in my 20s. I spent a lot of my time just like trying to find myself and learn about myself and like chasing a ring, to be quite transparent. And I can really relate to these women, particularly Thelma, where I just like just the thirst for freedom and being my own person. I do want to ask, like, I think I understand like Thelma's reasoning for wanting to move forward, and it's what we've been talking about, the sense of like she can't go back to Daryl, like she can't go back.
Well, she's been properly laid now, so
exactly. Yeah. Of course. But do you think that Louise's motivations are the same, like, or do you think that she's trying to, because her life, I think that she's running from her past. I think Thelma's running from her present. So I think that Louise is running from her past, and I think that she's trying to like get away from like all of her trauma and bad memories. And I don't really know if she's like necessarily like, I can't go back because Arkansas wasn't really her home anyway. And like, I don't know how established she was then, but I think like what she's looking for is like, I need to just like create a new life and like, just like forget everything. And I guess like ultimately that's the same end point, but I kind of feel like she is chasing jail, like running away from jail. And I think that she's like trying to just like disappear essentially.
I mean, I think I agree with you to an extent that like Thelma is escaping her present situation of now that she has experienced what it feels like to actually live, right? She says like after she does the holdup at the convenience store, she's like, oh, I found my calling, like I'm good at this. She can't go back to feeling like she has nothing. She has a sense of self at this point. Louise is, I feel like, more, I don't want to say a more complicated character than Thelma, because I don't know that it's like exactly that, but she just has more like skeletons in her closet in terms of her past. And to me, at least, what it felt like is almost like that high you experience when you have adrenaline of, if you have this high of adrenaline, you're not thinking about the bad thoughts, right? You're not letting the like, almost like depression and anxiety, like seep into your brain. And I think knowing that she has had a really rough time of it, and knowing that Thelma seems to be, for all intents and purposes, her best friend, I feel like she doesn't want to, she's living a very exciting life at the moment. And the thought of like slowing down, I know for me, especially when I'm like at my most, like when I'm having like the anxiety and the depression thoughts, like it's keeping busy is what helps, because your brain is focused on what you're doing. It doesn't have the quiet times to attack you. Right. So, Sarah, you tell me what you think about this. But that is kind of my general opinion on like the Thelma and Louise of it all.
Well, I like that they have different motivations. I mean, this is part of the strength of the movie, is that they're friends despite the differences, or because of their differences. Yeah. I mean, Louise's hairstyle at the beginning, the aggressively pinned hair, tells us everything we need to know. And she doesn't want Thelma to put her feet up on the dashboard with the wind blowing up her dress to start with. And she is accused by Thelma of being as bad as Daryl. And she is controlling of her to start with, and controlling of her own life. And when the references to Texas are made, when the awful man in the Silver Dollar car park can make her shoot him by calling her the B word, we know it's something else. We know there's something else there. And she speaks with such knowledge of, they won't believe you. They won't believe me. Yep. They won't believe us. What is it like to shoot a man until his head explodes? That is not how she killed the man in the parking lot. She shot him in the chest. So my assumption was always that she was sexually assaulted in Texas and she killed someone, and she's been on the run ever since, either told that no one would believe her, or no one believed her, or whatever it was. And this is why Harvey Keitel, who we love, says, I know what happened in Texas. And that moment is extraordinary. She's on in the phone. She's on the phone in the bar. She's talking to him. His voice is very Harvey Keitel, wonderfully persuasive. He's trying to get her to turn herself in, and she's like teetering in this moment. We never know if she would have actually or not. And Louise just, Thelma just hangs up the phone for her. She's become Louise. She's become the one that's in charge. She's become the one that says, let's keep going, which is the last thing she says. She says, let's keep going. And she looks out towards the horizon. Let's keep going. And they kiss and they drive. So I love that it's not explicit, because Louise cannot talk about it, even to her closest friend. But her reactions are very triggered and hyper vigilant around that stuff, which is unfortunately what can happen after sexual assault. So,
I think that makes a lot of sense to me, especially when you, having watched the whole film, when you go back to the moment when Thelma is outside with Harlan and Louise's reaction to it, and the fact that she, like, I mean, not that anybody else wouldn't react similarly regardless of their past, but when he refuses to apologize, right? And her reaction when she shoots him and Thelma wants to go to the police and she says, no, they won't believe you. Like immediately, not that women wouldn't think that already, but it, I feel like it's a series of events that just shows me that, like, that definitely happened to her and, like, her trying to deal with it. And especially back in the 90s, I mean, like, it's even, it's different. It's better today, obviously, in terms of being told, like,
can
you
can say somewhat better.
No, somewhat better in terms of being told, like, you know, you're allowed to have a voice to talk about this, right? Mm-hmm. It's more talked about than it was.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, one of the brilliant things about the film, one of the absolutely brilliant, there are many brilliant things, but one of them is that it is Thelma who is being sexually assaulted, but it is Louise who kills Harlan. So there's a complexity there where Louise cannot, at that time and maybe today, cannot claim self-defense. And as you know, they say, we got you away from him. They won't know. They won't know that we got away. No. Yes, I think now we say we believe victims more. I think it's very difficult to report sexual assault now. That's a whole other conversation.
Definitely.
But certainly in the 90s, and as they say, 200 people saw you drinking with him, dancing.
You were dancing with him all night. Yeah. And I think that's why it's the way the film sets it up is so brilliant, because we do see that, right? Like, we do see her dancing with him all night, very close. And they know, like, Louise knows right away. Louise has kind of that, like, the smarts to be able to say, they're not going to believe you. We have to get out of here. And I love, one of my favorite things about this film is, we said the character development is, like, it's very rich, right? It's very full. But Sarah, you mentioned this a little earlier. They swap spots almost, right? Where, like, Thelma starts out, and I don't want to use, like, alpha and beta, but it's, like, the best way that I could describe it is, like, Louise is in charge. She is first and foremost the driver. She is the one dictating where they go, when they go. Thelma is the one begging Louise, please, can we stop? Please, let's go get a drink and have fun. And then they have this role reversal after the money gets stolen, right? After Brad Pitt comes in, JD comes in, gives Thelma the best sex of her life, steals the money and leaves, gives her a little bit of knowledge.
And her diamond ring.
And her diamond ring and leaves. And Thelma takes, we see, like, Louise, Sarah, is devastated, right? Like, this is all the money they had and it's gone. And then all of a sudden Thelma is now in charge. She's the one who robs the convenience store with the tactics she had learned from JD, and she is the one saying, like, this is what we're gonna do, this is where we're going. She's the one who pulls the gun on the cop. And I just think it's so fascinating to me that we got this role reversal midway through the film. I don't think that's not a normal thing to happen in a movie. And it was so fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it definitely feels special. I would say that it speaks to Thelma really coming into her own and being able to become her own person with her own ideas and just, like, the freedom. And sometimes a lot of the time, like, you know, I think with partners, whether they be, I don't know, relationships or friendships, there's going to be times where you have to be strong for your partner, and there's going to be times where they have to be strong for you. And when Louise is breaking down because she thinks that all hope is lost, that's when Thelma is like, no, we're going to do this. We're going to make it to Mexico. Like, let's go. Like, wipe your tears. Like, we're going, and we're going to find a way. And I it's really funny because, like, just like you and I've covered a couple of shows where the debate is like, when do you just give up and like go to the cops? Like, I feel as though to have like such strong convictions to like, yeah, like, I will not go to the cops, when my first instinct is like, I just want to give up. Like, I don't want to run. I don't want to chase.
Yeah. You and I are very similar like that, where we know, yeah, we would make terrible criminals.
Okay, so your movie's like 20 minutes long?
Probably, yeah. So like,
I did it.
Yeah. Sarah, like, and you cover stuff on Crime Scene where obviously criminals or people that are not doing good or not going to the cops, like whether it be whatever situation that they're in. But it's just, they just have the urge to just keep going no matter what. And it just, I think like one of the more humorous bits about this movie is just like how it just spirals out of control. Because at first, like maybe, yeah, like maybe they could have made an argument that was self-defense, but then we got an armed robbery. Then we have a kidnapping, well, they just, a police officer in the car, so, and trunk.
They make it so much worse. But it's
and they blow up the truck, which was so worth brilliant. It.
That guy, yes, sucked.
Big pyrotechnics.
Yes. Well, he took off his wedding ring and got like 4 or 5 condoms. I don't quite know.
Wow.
He thought his ship had come in, but no, not at all.
Yeah. It's fascinating. There were so many small moments in this movie and big moments. It's so weird because, again, at first glance, it's an action movie, right? Like, yeah, it's an action movie. They're two women on the lam.
Yeah. Or is it a modern Western?
Okay. I could deal with that. Modern Western. Only the horses are a T-bird, which is cool, correct, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's also just this like story about female friendship and what it means to be a woman, right? Like what it means to not be a man in this world and how that can be difficult and tricky and demeaning and just like so hard. And this movie felt like it was saying so many things packaged in a very exciting movie. And it's, I don't know, I love this movie from start to finish. I just thought it was so epic. And I, you know what? I'm not even a car person. I'm really not. I don't care. Whatever gets me from A to B, totally fine.
That car.
If I'm rich, I will buy myself a 1966 Ford Thunderbird.
What about, it has to be blue?
It has to be blue.
The
exact color. It is so cool. Them driving it, I was like, you guys are so cool. It looks so cool driving that,
yes,
car.
Yes. And one of the, where you see the action chops here of this director when they're driving along the edge of the Grand Canyon, and coming around the corner of the canyon, there's a helicopter inside the canyon. And you just go, it's breathtaking.
Yeah, beautiful. It's a beautiful movie.
But it doesn't
movie.
Feel like a different movie. That,
yeah,
you think, okay, here's a story about female friendship, two gal pals going off for a weekend. And now we're going to see a helicopter flying through the Grand Canyon. And that is the same movie, because the vistas that we've gone across, the dusty back roads, we've gone through oil derricks, we've seen small towns, and then we've seen them driving at night through these beautiful rock formations with the stars above.
Yeah,
it's stunning.
It really is a beautiful movie. I was very blown away by the scenery and the landscape. And they were going through, what, they're in Utah, Arizona, is that where we were at?
I meant to get a map out.
I'm pulling up a map right now. I'm terrible.
Yeah, they're in Oklahoma. Louise gives Thelma the maps and says, "Find us a faster way to the border without going through Texas."
So they'd have to go all the way around to like New Mexico or Louisiana, yes, are their only options. But they went New Mexico.
They went
route.
New Mexico, and it's, mm-hmm, just incredible. And it's, yeah, very American. Like, I don't, yeah, quite know what I mean by that. But
like a Western.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that idea of the idea of America, because there's cowboy hats and Brad Pitt is a cowboy. JD, his character JD,
and the accents are very like Southern American type of thing. And you're right, and I think that the setting, that's a thing, like everything about this movie feels intentional. The setting is so refreshing as someone who watches a lot of television and movies that take place in New York and California, or like they're trying to trick us and it's really like Toronto or Vancouver. You know what I mean? As someone who watches a lot of TV and film, there's so many that take place in those cities, especially around the holidays. Oh my God, everything is a New York holiday. It's so refreshing to see something Western, to see something out near the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
See these, the different, right? We get the moment where Louise takes off her jewelry and there's a little bit of turquoise in there. You know what I mean? It just, it feels very Western American in a very refreshing way, with the dust kicking up everywhere when they're driving. And it's just, it's so original. That's what it feels like to me. And so original. So I'm going to admit something very embarrassing. I've been saving this for the podcast all day. This is so dumb, but this just proves that the educational system in America is broken. I have never seen this movie. I, for the longest time, thought that this was like based on a true story, that Thelma and Louise
I know what you're thinking of
existed, and it was because of the, like, what is it, man and wife,
Bonnie and Clyde
that actually do live in, they existed in real life.
Yes.
I don't know why I thought Thelma and Louise was like, oh yeah, this tag team badass.
I don't think it's so dumb, because I think that the story of like two people on the lam is like a tale as old as time in like Western America lore. So I don't think it's dumb or anything.
Plus, they referenced so much, right? Like, we knew what Thelma, I knew the general idea of what Thelma and Louise was going to be about before we started watching it, because it's referenced so much in pop culture.
It's huge in pop culture. Yeah. I'm just surprised that the ending wasn't spoiled for you.
I had no idea. I mean, once we got to the ending and the police caught them by the Grand Canyon, I was like, there's no way they're turning themselves in. Like, they're going to drive off the cliff. Like, I knew it at that point, but no, I had no idea that was how the movie ended. I thought, I don't know what I thought going towards the end when they started racking up more and more, a higher body count, and just more and more crimes. I kind of felt like, well, maybe they'll have them get to Mexico and get away with it. I didn't think they would ever be arrested. Like, I didn't think that that was going to be how the movie ended. But no, somehow I didn't get spoiled on the ending.
There's that incredible shock moment where they're being followed by just so many police cars. It's almost Blues Brothers-ish. And they go through a culvert, and then a police car comes through the culvert and gets stuck. And then there's this really quiet minute or 2 minutes where they're just driving in the dust.
Yeah.
And they and we can't quite believe it, because there's no police cars anywhere. And it's just like them. And that exhale of breath where you go, oh, my God. And I wanted to bring up another formative film of my youth, my extreme youth, I will say, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which was made in 1969. It's a Western. It's incredible. I haven't watched it for a few years, but it's the most wonderful. It was revolutionary as a Western. Westerns were very out of fashion by that time. And to bring it in with young Paul Newman, young Robert Redford, we're talking about young Brad Pitt, it's that same idea of these stars with incredible charismatic power. And look, it's a true story, so I suppose I'll spoil the end. I don't know.
Why not?
Can I? They jump off a waterfall and then freeze in midair. So it's like this idea of,
that's how it, okay.
You never see the bodies. Same thing with Thelma and Louise. We do not see the car, even on its downward trajectory. We just see it flying off the edge, and there's a stillness. And when I rewatched this, I went, Butch Cassidy, it's the same thing. And the same thing of this platonic friendship that is, you know, really powerful, that there's a series of escalating events that happen, and our heroes. So if Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid can be heroes, why can't Thelma and Louise be
heroes? Of course, they're definitely heroes. And I think, like, that's probably why I thought it was very, like, I thought they were real, because of the Bonnie and Clyde thing, where they're both the best thing for each other and also kind of the worst thing for each other simultaneously, because we get to a point where Thelma has held up the convenience store, and it may be
like
after
a pro.
Yeah, like a, she killed
I
it.
I love, like, because there is such a feminine urge. Like, we talk a lot about it, about like apologizing in emails. How Boys. Apologetic these women are for doing these crimes. Like, they're excuse me, can you please hand over the money? I hope you don't mind. Like, please hand it over. Thank you very much. I'll just get out of your way. Same thing with when they kidnapped the police officer. Everything that they did was said with an apology, because like women have to just like apologize yes. for existing.
But she uses the words that JD used to seduce her. So JD acted out the robbery, which she found very seductive because he's a bad boy. So it's this brilliant that it was planted, but we didn't realize it was planted because it had its use the first time around, which was to seduce her with his bad boyery. And it worked. So sorry, Jess, please go on.
No. It's like, that's exactly right. Because then we get to a point where Luis is, they're driving, and I think it might be after the cop thing happens too. And they're just driving, and Luis is just like, you know what, but we're on the run and we're great. And she shouts and she's like excited. And I, again, like, that's why they're the best and the worst for each other, because in a normal situation where you don't have these two women kind of egging each other on, one of them wakes up and is like, what are we doing? Like, we have to turn ourselves in. We have to go to the police. But they're not doing that. Like, it seems like at a certain point, Louise is in for it, right? Like, when Thelma comes up to the cop and puts a gun to his head, Thelma is like, or Louise is like, all right, you know what? Great. And then the Thelma shoots air holes in the cop's trunk. And I'm like, Thelma, girl, like, wow, this is where and we are with you.
Louise shoots the wrong radio. Thelma's so in charge. Shoot the radio. No, the police radio. I mean, it's wonderful. One thing that occurred to me, which has never occurred in any of my watches before, is what is the story if they don't stop at the Silver Bullet? What is the story if they get to that cabin and fish? Because for the first time, I really noticed, like, it's very comical how much Thelma has packed. She's packed a huge, she's got so much stuff. It's comical, but for the first time I saw it and I thought, that's somebody who's leaving.
She's not planning on going back.
Whether she consciously did or not, she has, like, her entire drawer of underwear goes in, which is, again, played for the comedy of, oh, ditzy old Thelma, she can't even pack for a weekend. Rather than thinking they'd go for the weekend and then meekly go back, it's like, is Thelma ever going back? Occurred to me for the first time, you know, really early. It's just an idea.
Yeah, that's a good, interesting thought, because I think that, I don't know, like, maybe she meets a fisherman and who's she starts talking to and realizes there's an alternate life that she can live. Like, I think that there's many a possibility. Like, she's been stuck in the house essentially for all this time in her probably little honky-tonk town. And it's the first time that she's ever, like, got out. And I'm sure she would take the first opportunity that she can to make a life of herself. It's something that maybe she unintentionally did, but ultimately she was ready to get out and
whatever she could do. Louise.
It feels
Louise is very battened down. You know, the hair is battened down. She puts the glass on the side of the sink. Her life seems very circumscribed, even when she's in her waitressing uniform with the little hat and the penny. I mean, she's a slender person, but she seems very, even within that, like, really contained. So I think that Louise is the one who would have gone to the cabin, had the very nice weekend, and come back. And it's Louise's kind of subconscious rising through her that something would have happened, not necessarily a murder.
No, she was bubbling over, right? Like, everything had boiled up to the point of bubbling over. I think the inciting incident of Louise shooting Harlan, and then, you know, that, I think, snaps something in Thelma. But I think the longer Thelma is away from home and the more that she sees that's out there to be seen, to do, to exist, I think it was a matter of time anyway. You're right. I think Louise has her weekend, goes home, right? She still has all that money that she ends up asking Jimmy to get for her.
And but, she has a fine relationship with Jimmy. It's what she's settled for. He's mostly good to her. He only throws a chair every now and then.
He proposed to her in that hotel room, right?
Well, only as she says, because you thought I was here with someone else. You thought I was here with another man. But, you know, that's the next step, isn't it? Okay, we'll get married. But for Thelma, it's – and, in fact, very early, like within minutes of – the film, she is objecting to Louise treating her the way that Harlan treats her. So she's ready to shrug that off. She's ready to leave that behind. So in a way, she is, while appearing to be the follower and the beat, as you say, Jess, it's sort of a bit bald to say.
A dated term.
But you know, the follower, let's say, in the relationship, it's almost like the very Thelma-ness of her was always going, something was always going to happen, whether it be murder is another story.
Especially because she is the one who is willing to move outside of the structure that Luis has implemented, right? Even though I kind of like, you know what, I kind of like Luis as the driver and Thelma as the passenger, because literally that's also the case.
But and in then, the night in New Mexico,
exactly.
Thelma drives.
Exactly. And so I think, and it's Thelma who is like, hey, here's Brad Pitt. Let's take him with us. Right. She is always the one stepping outside of this box that like Luis has around their kind of trip. And she's the one who kind of is coloring outside of the lines a little bit and almost like seeing what she can get away with, experimenting, dabbling, trying. It feels very, to me, it feels very like someone, this is so silly, but like, someone who grew up in a very small town and then goes away to college for the first time and lives it up. Like that is what Thelma reminds me of, although she's doing it in a 35-year-old woman's body.
Her just being fucked the next morning look is brilliant.
The hair?
The hair.
Her, a little smitten thing, isn't
she? The way
she
oozes into that cafe, the way she slides into the chair, her barely repressed laughter. I mean, it's just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
If I can say, I did do a film with Gina Davis, and she is magnet. Like the reason everybody likes Thelma, and whenever you see her, she's so charismatic. And one thing that made me cross, I'd never noticed before, is there's some background police chatter, and they describe Louise as, you know, brown hair, whatever it is, 5'7", yes, perhaps. And then they describe Thelma as 5'10". I am telling you right now, Gina Davis is not 5'10".
No, she's 6 foot even.
She's six.
She's tall.
And I'm tall. She's taller than me. And she is just so magnetic. And I think watching this movie again and seeing, you know, that face and that magnetism that she has for everyone around her, including Louise. You can see why they're friends. I mean, Susan Sarandon, a very handsome woman, of course, but it's like that idea of the button down, repressed is entirely the wrong word for Louise, controlling Louise, and her attraction towards this free spirit and perhaps towards the danger that actually lurks inside Thelma.
Yeah. I think part of it too, that I really just loved and appreciated talking a little bit more about like Thelma and Louise and their relationship to one another, is like they trade places of taking care of one another. And I just loved that, because there will be times, right? Like Louise being the type A, the controlling one, the driver in their relationship. It very early in the movie, it feels like, oh, okay, Luis is going to be the one constantly taking care of Thelma, making sure she doesn't walk off too far with Harlan, right? Making sure she doesn't drink too much and you know, making sure they get to the cabin on time and on and on and on. But I love how they switch places at a certain point where Thelma takes control. She takes the wheel and takes care of Luis. And I think that is like, that is how friendships work. That's how any relationship works, where there are going to be times where you're not I don't want to say not the strong one, but you're the one who needs the help. You're the one who needs someone to take care of you. And I really loved that in this 2-hour movie, we got so much of the back and forth and what makes them work as a duo. And I just can't imagine this movie with anybody but Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis in these roles. Like they embody these roles so well. you believe, and I totally believe everything you're saying about Gina Davis. Like, she oozes charisma. Like, it comes out of every pore on her body. And I don't see a world where anybody else but these two play these characters, because they have, a lot of people talk about chemistry. Usually it's between romantic partners in TV and movies. They have such chemistry as a friend, you believe their friendship. And not only that, but you believe they've been friends for a very long time.
Yes, they deal with, they allow and deal with them being cross with each other.
Yes.
And, you know, angry with each other in a way that, you know, it's very rare to see that expressed in female friendships when it's not a bitchy fight. And yep. when it's not yep. a bitchy fight about a man. Like, every
oh, yeah.
day, boy, does this pass the bitch to tell test. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. So the film doesn't shy away from letting them be angry with each other. You know, that Louise is, you know, clearly thinks it's all Thelma's fault. Thelma knows that Louise thinks that simmering anger, her guilt, but also like, what did I do wrong? I just wanted a drink. I just wanted to have some fun. It's not my fault that Harlan, you know, attacked me. So there's that resentment and, but they are still friends. So I think you're right that we see it bedded in this very, in this long, deep friendship.
Yeah. It's just such a, I can't like, if I don't know why anybody would listen to this podcast if they haven't seen the movie, but like, seriously, go watch it, especially if you're not a man. I feel like it just resonates so with the non-male experience. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it speaks so well to that. And just like, gosh, how demeaning it is. They have to deal with this truck driver the whole time. And mm-hmm. like how they finally just get fed up with it. And like the lengths that you can only go push people so far before they snap. And that's what it feels like this movie is they've snapped. They've had enough of dealing with the lives that they're in. And a lot of it feels like the way society has treated them.
Right.
Society has put them in this box and told them you have to be XYZ and you can't, more importantly, you cannot be XYZ.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. It's an important film.
Yeah. That kind of leads me to my like final, or one of my final questions is like how we feel about the ending, about them ultimately deciding to drive off the cliff. And at first I think that I was a little like soft on it, but now after some time with the film, once again, before this adventure, they didn't have a lot of choices. This was their choice. They decided where their life was going to go. They were not going to let another person, man or female or jury or judge, decide what was going to happen to them. They took their decision and their life into their hands, and they drove off the cliff. And once again, ultimately, it was their decision, their choice. And I think that that is powerful, and it continues to kind of reinforce the fact that like these women never really got a choice to make decisions before, mm-hmm. Whether being the fact that you know, the society that they're in, or their economic status, or the fact that they were women in this world or whatnot. But ultimately, this was their choice, and I can really appreciate that. And I wanted to know what both of you thought of the ultimate ending. Their choice, assuming that they decided to drive off the cliff and ultimately ended their life in a way. Well, in, I don't know. I don't think that there is a giant like pillow when they.
I do.
You do.
This, you can imagine. Yeah.
Well, I mean, talk about bodily autonomy. Sarah, I think you absolutely encapsulated why the ending is the ending. And for me, narratively, it's that heroicness. It's the Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's that idea of, and they're still out there today. Like if they escape and they get to Mexico, think, well, okay. But if they drive off the cliff and they're still driving, that to me is the resonance. The idea of, you know, the whaling ship that's still out there to this day, the pirate ship that can't come to shore, the outlaw that can't come home, and these women who can't go back to what they had before, and still today they drive along the Grand Canyon. That's the elevation that I see for the end of this movie. You know, personally, if they were real people, of course we'd like them to live, but the resonance of that ending, I think, to me is just perfect, and sort of gets more perfect every time I see it. I think. Jess, what about you?
I couldn't have been happier with the ending. I felt like it had to, this had to be the way it ended. Any other ending wouldn't feel as satisfying as this one does. And it's because, like you said, Sarah, they have control over their own lives, right? For maybe the first time. And they decide, and I just think the way it was shot, right? Where they, Thelma says, what if we keep going? Mm-hmm. And then we see them floor it, and they, the holding of the hands, like everything is perfect. The way they like the, and the music, right? It isn't sad music. It is freedom music. Like that music screams freedom, screams happiness, screams decisiveness. And I just think there's no other way they could have ended the film for me to be more satisfied than I was. It just felt like everything had led up to this point, right? Like, it was so perfect, and they ended things together, right? Like, in a modern twist, Thelma and Louise would be lesbians falling in love together on the road, right? Like, I'm happy that it is for, I like the story of the female friendship, better, but I just think like, they're perfect together. They are soulmates. And, I don't know that they could make the ending any better than it was, besides maybe them getting away. But I still think this is probably better than them getting away, because it feels more realistic.
Like, what's the end game? Like, eventually they're going to get caught.
They live on a beach in Mexico. Yeah. Like, I think the move is like nowadays.
Oh, you want them to Shawshank it? No. Yeah. So much better.
It's so much better. And mm-hmm. it's perfect. The ending is perfect. I love it. I think it's one of the best endings of a movie I think I've seen. Like, it just feels right. And I know this feels like an ending that like the studio pushes back on, but the creators are like, no, it needs to end this way.
Mm-hmm. I think you're actually on the nose about that. I think
because people want happy endings. This is a happy ending.
Do an alternative ending, and they pushed against it.
Of course they did, because everybody wants their package wrapped up in a neat little bow. Yeah. But you know what? Life is messy. These women are messy physically, mentally, emotionally. Life is messy,
and they're wearing those filthy, filthy hats. Oh, the heads gross. Of dirty, greasy men. I mean, disgusting. They're like these trophies that they get from these dirty men. Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's just perfect. Everything about this movie is honestly perfect.
There are certain, shots in the movie that are just burned into my retinas. But, I loved this movie passionately when I saw it in 1991. And it was the sort of the first date, as it were, of me and my and one of my best friends now. We've known each other for a very long time. And she and I decided to go to the movies together. Talk about strong female friendships. And, I'm the artsy one. I was in the theatre. She is a very accomplished executive type woman, still is. She was and is. And we had a little glass of wine afterwards, and we both had tears in our eyes. And I was so shocked that this very put together fashionista executive woman, and she was talking about, and we were, 1991, I was 31, she was 30. And it really got to her, this thing about freedom. And I was really very taken aback. And she did say, don't tell anyone that I cried. So I didn't until her 60th birthday, where I gave a speech and told. But for me, there are shots in the film that are so in my mind. But I wondered, having not seen it, were there shots or stills that you had seen? Was there something iconic? The cowboy hat, the two women in the car. Were you familiar with any of the visuals of this movie before you saw it?
For me, I know that there is debate if this was the first ever selfie taken in a movie. I don't think it was. I think there was another one that predated it. But the beginning where they had the Polaroid and they shot that selfie. And then when they're driving off the cliff, the picture was in their car and it flew away within the wind. And it's just like kind of an embodiment of their friendship. I think that other imagery that stands out in my head is certainly the scenery of, the Western America, seeing the sand dunes and the dust. It was really a really standout, gorgeous film. But And I do think, like, just like the thought of like driving off the cliff and like doing it together with your friend and like hand in hand, I think like that is like ultimate imagery and kind of like in what stands out in pop culture and in pop culture references. I think I've heard people reference Thelma and Louise in like countless TV shows or even podcasts throughout the years. So I think that those are some things that stand out to me.
I don't know if I had, I don't know that I've ever seen like GIFs or imagery like about the movie. I know, I think the one thing I did know was that it was two women in a convertible. Like I could have told you that much. That's for some reason, I feel like I knew a convertible was part of it. But leaving the film, I feel like there are so many moments that stand out to me in terms of like, I will forever remember those. And it's the smaller moments, at least smaller in terms of no explosions, right? Mm-hmm. The moment when Thelma says, like, I feel alive, right? Like, I loved it. The moment when, like you talked about earlier, Sarah, when they get away from the cops, or at least they think they do, and it's very quiet, and Thelma smokes. And earlier we see her, like, testing out how she looks with a cigarette in her mouth, right? And I know Ariel from Pusher Recaps, he loves a cool looking smoker. And I feel like these two women are very cool looking smokers.
Even as we see Thelma will light and smoke the beginning of a cigarette and then hand it to Louise, that sharing of cigarettes talks to their bond, you know, as well. I'm so glad that you both knew so little about the movie for your first, you know, for your first viewing of it.
It was so rewarding. It just felt like, it was escalating so much, but it never felt like it was rushed. You know, still had so many quiet moments that I felt like were just as important as anything else happening in the movie. I didn't feel like, even though, again, I judge movies that are too long because it feels like they're just adding stuff in for no reason. This movie felt like it was as long as it needed to be.
Very true.
There was no waste of time.
Just small moments like Thelma in a bikini with her huge pull-along suitcase, going to sit beside this very meager, mean pool at this dreadful motel.
At the motel, yeah.
With her Walkman in, listening to music. And Louise just roars up in the car and screams for her to get in the car.
After she told her to go to the pool.
Exactly.
And Jessica, if you ever did that to me, if you were like, go to the pool, and then I have my whole setup, I'm listening to my tunes, and then like 15 minutes later you're beeping the car, I'd be like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm at the pool.
Yeah. I want to go to the pool anyway. But she droobs along to the pool in that. So those small moments of their relationship, as you say, Jess, it's like no, there's no wasted. No. Nothing's wasted. It's beautiful.
Every moment feels important in this movie, and it feels like it speaks to something, whether or not it's like one of them snapping or like just an escalation or a quiet moment where like a Susan Sarandon, right? Like you have like Jimmy is like asleep in the hotel room, and you just see Louise like looking out the window of the motel. Like, again, even those quiet moments, they feel so important in this movie. Because it is showing character development. And I think, like, again, credit to Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis, because it does take a lot. Like, sometimes it's not easy to act in quieter moments, but I feel like they did such a commendable job at excelling in those quiet moments.
Yeah. Even the comedy is quiet. It's so a good. Very funny movie, but it's not hourly funny. It's like almost dry, very subtle, which I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I wrote down there were moments because Sarah watched the movie before I did. And so I would like be messaging her things that Thelma just got fucked from Arkansas to Timbuktu by Brad Pitt. the part I loved is I said, this is what wasting your life with some shitty, no good men will do to you. Make you go on a crime spree. and one of my favorite moments was Louise when they're driving, they're drinking and driving a lot of this film with the tiny, I don't know what those are called, the teeny tiny
airplane bottles.
I love when Louise yells at Thelma not to litter after they've committed a bunch of crimes. It's just so funny, like Sarah, like you're saying, it's like it's not like outwardly like slapsticky funny, but it is like it's so silly. It's she's like, don't litter,
don't do it.
It's so good. I especially love
just even like the cops when the cop just very quietly starts crying.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of kids. And yes. She's, I wrote this one down too. My husband wasn't sweet to me. Look how I turned out. but that was the cop with the moment, a very quiet moment where you have the guy on the bicycle getting high and he hears the cop in the trunk and he just takes that moment to blow the marijuana smoke into the trunk. Like, so funny, so perfect, hilarious. This movie was so good. But of course, I have to ask the question. Now that we've reached the end of the podcast, I have to ask the question. Who is the Thelma and who is the Louise?
I'm curious for Sarah before we answer for me and Jess. Since you saw this film with a very close friend of yours, you know, when it first came out in 91 and you were 30 something, who at that moment did you feel?
Only 31.
31, a young and fresh 31.
Very young, very fresh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jess is 31. She's young and fresh. So freshest. I was wondering, like, that had to be a conversation that you and your friend had at that restaurant afterwards.
Well, we were not at that time friends. She was a close friend of mine's girlfriend. Once you realize in those days when there was a lot of short relationships, once you think, oh, I think this is going to stick, why don't you and I go to a movie, you know, that kind of idea. So that's why I was kind of very surprised to see into her soul, because I didn't know her very well. We didn't discuss which was which, no, but to this day she's the Louise and I'm the Thelma, but in other relationships I'm Louise and the other person's Thelma.
Yeah, it's all about perspective, right? About like it's relative.
And I think also that wonderful moment of crossing over once the money's gone and Thelma takes the reins and eventually does in fact drive the car, that we see, and both of you have said this throughout our discussion today, that it can pass backwards and forwards. So if I'm Harvey Keitel, which of you is which, do you think, in your relationship or just as yourselves?
All right. Well, first of all, like, Jess, if we committed a murder, like, can we just go to the police? I don't want to run.
So that makes you Thelma straight away.
So that's what I thought. I thought that I was the Thelma. I was like the crying dramatically on the bed, and the person that overpacked, and I thought that at first I was the Thelma, but ultimately I could be the Louise, and that
it
might
so
be the change. Like, I think that, like, it's very interesting because, like, I thought at first when I watched the movie that I was like the Thelma, but then as I watched, I was like, maybe I'm the Louise. And I think it's because of this change in Thelma and Louise that we've been discussing for the last hour, of like there's a switch between them. And I think ultimately, like, I don't think like I'm like the moral center between the two of us, Jess, but like I think I'm like too anxiety ridden to be running from the cops.
Yeah, so definitely in the beginning of the film I was like, I am the Louise, 1000%. I am the one keeping us on schedule. I am the one saying we're not making any stops, we're getting straight there, hold your pee till we get there, you know, like only have one drink at the bar because we have a plan. I'm the one who's like in charge of the money, right, who is like working. I feel like that is me doing all of those things.
I would lose the money or spend it on something frivolous.
Yeah,
you don't trust me with money ever.
You would overpack, like all of these things felt very true. I would just be the one to take the wheel, to take control, to be the driver. I would also be the one driving the car as well.
That's true, because my car is like busted as heck.
Well, also I get car sick, and
you
so
don't
I
want me to be driving my car. You won't be making it very far running from the cops if we take my car.
But I do think, like, as time goes on, I don't know. I do love Thelma. Like, they're both fantastic characters. This is not like a dig at either one of them to say I don't want to be so-and-so or I would be more so-and-so. I do still think I'm a Louise even by the end of the film, because I don't like the moment that JD steals Luis's money and she breaks down, I also think that would be me. I don't know what I'm okay. I feel like I am reactive to whoever is around me in a bad situation. So if I had someone around me acting like Louise and breaking down and crying, I feel like I would be more steady. Whereas if I could be the one breaking down and crying, I would be. And Sarah, I do think like depending on the situation, that's what I think is so wonderful about their friendship is there is the trade-off. And I do think we also have that. So I think there are moments where both of us could be each of them. But I think normal day-to-day life, I'm more Louise, you're more Thelma is what my...
That would have been what I would have said as well.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
We did put a Twitter poll up. What did the people say, Sarah?
They said, okay, the thing about Twitter polls is that they answer questions, but we don't know why they think these things.
That's so true. Yeah. We don't know why they said what they said.
They said that you were the Thelma and I was the Louise. And maybe that's because, like, you're more effervescent than I am. Like, you're... You have like the more sillier side.
It's so true. I think Thelma is sillier than Louise.
Yeah. So maybe that's what it is. But you and I like to get to like the down and dirty, like the underneath
our core.
Of it all,
yeah.
At our core. So we know each other better than
any of
people on Twitter.
on Twitter. No, I like, I feel bad because we asked your opinion and for me to be like, you're stupid and wrong is.
Well,
like,
I think
not
the answer is
saying.
We both have our moments as each of them.
Right. Yeah. But I definitely I have zero desire to run from the cops ever. And I think like Sarah, were we on crime scene when I talked about the tomato story?
Remind me.
So like the tomato story was like when I was a kid, I like stole a tomato from the salad bar. My dad saw me like eat the tomato and he was like, where did you get that tomato from? And I was like, the salad bar. And my dad like made me go to the manager and admit to the manager that I stole the tomato. And like ever since then, like I've been like so afraid of like cops and doing things wrong, and like I just got scared silly. Like I don't want to be on the run. I don't want to be on the lam.
I could easily be on the lam, I think.
You think so? Jess, how far would you get on the lam?
I'd be terrible on the lam. I have like issues with authority in that I hate upsetting people, and especially if someone is like hierarchically, that's not a word, above me.
Yes, it is.
Okay, there we go. I just feel like I didn't pronounce it correctly. I have like issues. I get very paranoid when cops are behind me. I tend to just go off on a side street just so that they're not following me, because the moment they're following me is the moment
that's very suspicious behavior.
I know. I'm a suspicious
looking
person.
Is true. I do have that urge to like when they are behind me and to like go turn
pull into a
like,
grocery store or
I
something
do think
to get
that
away.
That is more suspicious.
No,
you just
it
have to keep going.
Suspicious, but I get very anxious around them, and so I think I'm an anxious person by nature.
We're too anxious to be crime criminals.
I would need a lot more Lexapro if I was going to be on the lam.
I do think that I would be very apologetic at any crime that I do. I do think
the Thelma
excuse
of the
me,
like
I'm
please,
sorry
you. Yeah,
I'm just
but
gonna
society
take
has told us to be like
don't
that
mind. I know. Like, it's the email thing that I said before. Hi, I just want to follow up if you don't
just
mind.
Just following up. !! So I'm definitely not mad.
I was told that you can say just. I just that because that means that, like, I don't know.
That's apologetic.
Apologetic. So I've stopped saying just in my emails. I say I wanted to follow up. And it was hard at first.
I should do that too.
Yeah, and don't
and,
say
and your
just.
Next step, and your next step is to say, I'm following up.
Ooh, I'm following up. Ooh, that sounds like so authoritative.
It's so difficult, especially my line of work. I deal with a lot of men and a lot of older men, and it is very much more difficult, right, to then implement those things and not be accused of being a beast.
Just, you know, they should once they all pop their clogs. Mm-hmm. When you're getting around. Anyway, that's a whole other story.
A bee is like a
beaver.
I do
love men. I love men, but you know, enough.
A beaver.
Enough. Yeah. You've been in charge too long. It's not your turn
but
anymore.
It is I'm so happy we were able to watch this movie. And I'm so happy, yes, Sarah, that you were able to join
so
us.
Thank you so much for inviting me to select from the list. And I mean, it was quite an extensive list. And it was as if there's a auga of this Thelma and Louise. I thought, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. We were circling around it as well. And I don't know, Sarah, you picked the movies that just like stick with us. Like with Interview with the Vampire, I told Jessica this a couple months ago or whatever. I was like, I thought about that movie like every day for like 4 months. It's like really stuck with her. And I haven't seen Jess as passionate about a film as Thelma and Louise in a really long time.
Yeah. I think like this is one of my favorites that we've ever covered. I think there is just like there are some that really stick with me. This one is going to be one of them. And I know I can feel myself going to be referencing it in the future. This one and My Cousin Vinny are like, I feel like the top of my list of like, gosh, that was so enjoyable. And why have I not seen this film before?
And
like,
those are two movies that you and I didn't really pick. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to
pick this. And not that they're not noteworthy. Like, I've heard of both of them. You know what I mean? Like, I know they exist. It was more of just like, I've never like been intrigued enough to check them out. And I'm so happy we did, because I feel like I've learned so much from watching this movie. Again, like, this is why we do this podcast, is to like, well, what did the 90s teach us? And like, there's still so many valuable lessons to learn from this movie, even though it is, you know, 30-ish years old at this point.
How to make interesting movies, right? That's one of the things that'll teach
us.
Yeah.
It was so fun. But Sarah, we know you're on Crime Scene. What else do you have going on? What are you covering on Crime Scene? Lots of crimes going on.
There's lots of crime. Crime doesn't stop. on RHAP, you can find me talking crime every week with Murray Forth at Crime Scene. You can follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carradine. I'll let you know everything that I'm doing there. I'm going to be on a round table talking about the Traders US.
The show.
A day or two or yesterday, depending on the timeline of this podcast. But yes, just generally swimming in the ocean. It's summer here in Sydney, and enjoying a very nice life. I think that I did break through. I didn't go back, and I am awake, and I can recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you. Over at Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, as a reminder, we have finished our coverage of Boy Meets World, our 2.5-year project, which was incredible accomplishment of 2022. So we are ramping up the bonus content. I think that we're going to do 2 films in February, and we are continuing our coverage of Dawson's Creek. Of course, we're on season 5 of that, mid-season 5, or, you know, turning the corner for the end of season 5. That's about it for me, but you can find me at Sarah Ferguson, and you can find me at Shit 90s Pod on Twitter and Instagram, yada yada yada. Jess, let's break down what's going over at PSR.
Yeah, so over at Pusher Recaps, you can hear me. Adam and I finished up our coverage of Mythic Quest season 3. That show is such a delight. So go check that out. National Treasure: Edge of History is still happening. That show, it's a little bit messy, but it's really fun to chat about it, especially because I'm talking with Marissa and we're having a really fun time. So go check that out as well. Community Building is back with season 5. Thank everything. We are done with season 4 now. So we can get back on the hype train of loving Community. Coming up very soon, Brooklyn Zed and I are going to be talking The Last of Us, the new HBO show coming out. We're going to be playing the video game for the first time alongside watching the show. It's going to be a massive show. I've heard it, like, critics absolutely love it. So I'm really, really excited to check that out. That's everything I have going on. You could follow me at the Jess Sterling on Twitter. And this has been so much fun. I can't wait to get into more bonus content. It was nice to have a few weeks off in January to kind of rest, recuperate from the holidays and get refreshed. But I'm ready to dive back into 2023 now with a vengeance. So check out more content from us on the way. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you all next time. Bye.
Just ask. Shit 90 Shows Taught Me.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.